I'm DeMay Roberts. Stage and Studio is on location today. I'm in the office of Chris Coleman, Artistic Director of Portland Center Stage. And Chris, I was wondering if you would take me on a tour of your office.
Well, it's kind of small, don't you think? It does have a good view because you can see out the glass. You can see the trusses of the lobby, you know, which I don't know if you know, but these trusses, when the building was originally constructed, were the largest expanse west of the Mississippi.
Let's go look at it.
Yeah, and they're actually, a lot of people think that they're steel, but they're actually old-growth Douglas fir. I have a piano here on the balcony outside my office. And it's they can store it there, but also I'm getting ready for Grey Gardens, and I just like to pluck out the score badly on the piano so that I can get the rhythms into my head.
Do you play?
You know, I played for a year. I played the alto sax and I played the violin, so I'm very musical.
I don't think people know this about you.
Yeah, but I can't like sit down and play something competently, but I can pluck out the rhythms and the tunes.
Can you just play something?
Oh, yeah, let's see. Da-da-da-da-da, 3 flat. Ba 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 ba. Really simple. I got my Bat Boy poster on the wall. Dan Savage's book, The Kid, about he and his partner up in Seattle adopting a kid, because I was thinking that somebody told me that it might make a good adaptation for the stage. And then you just kind of see the roof of the armory and the skylights right up here, and I can look down and actually see people come in for the matinee this afternoon.
So you have like a little reading area here outside of your office, and you kind of overlook everything.
Yeah,
so you're reachable.
Yeah, and I can, I'm kind of secluded from everybody else, so I can be quiet and read a play here if I need to, but I also have what people call my Ava Perone perch. So I can kind of greet the masses or kind of see what's going on.
Do you do that? Do you ever, like, don't cry for me?
I do sing sometimes. And occasionally, like, Storm will come in and she'll play at the piano and you can hear her all the way up.
Storm Large.
Yeah, in my office. So it's kind of a fun little perch.
Did you intentionally plan when you were building this building that you would have this perch?
No,
here?
No. We knew that the two corner offices were going to have glass on it. And I didn't know if I was going to, there's another larger office on the other side that, you know, people thought I might like. But first I was nervous about this because there are two doors between me and the rest of the staff. And I thought, oh, I'm going to feel lonely. And then ultimately when we got in here, I thought, you know, no, that's actually, you can concentrate. And if you need to read a play during the day, you can actually kind of hide and accomplish that. So it's actually worked out really nicely.
All right. Well, thank you for sharing your space here.
Sure.
Let's go back into your office.
All right.
Portland Center Stage raised about $17 million for this building. Is that correct?
You know, what I know is that it was a $38 million project and we have $9.1 million to go. So what is that? That's actually $28 million that we raised.
Are you still working on the building? I mean, it's a huge building and I haven't...
On the capital campaign or on the building itself?
On the building itself.
Oh, no. The building itself is fantastic and greatly functional beyond our wildest dreams. It took us a while to get the park finished, but now that's just dandy. And it's busy. You know, it's crazy. When we thought about building it, DeMay, we hoped that maybe some people would come in and hang out in the lobby. Well, it's been just crazily popular. I mean, we'll have film shoots in there, and we'll have classes from John Day come in and do a tour, and we'll have environmental lectures and film festivals and all kinds of corporate events. And just, it's been really fun to see how the building's gotten used by the community.
So it is providing a revenue stream.
Yeah, absolutely. There's a split between some of our public space usage is just a straight rental, and then some of it is a community group that we want to partner with, and we'll just let, you know, we'll do it at cost, or, you know, just cover our expenses and comp everything else.
It's really interesting in this climate, you know, with the economic downturn, and recently actually you wrote an editorial in the Oregonian about the economic contribution that arts groups make. Would you talk a little bit about that?
Well, that was really in response to, you know, there was a $50 million that was initially allocated in the House of Representatives for the NEA to help arts groups weather the current downturn. And then that was stripped out of the Senate package, really, because people like John McCain and a couple of others stood up and said, you know, I don't have anything against the arts, but they don't create jobs. And really, I just wanted to counter that argument. that in fact, hello, the arts industry in this country creates, employs more people than the auto industry. And we just don't think of it in those terms because people think, well, it'd be fun to work in the arts. So, you know, why should anybody get help out in that way? And in fact, there are estimates that we'll lose 10% of the nonprofit arts sector in 2009. That would, you know, look like about 210,000 jobs. So to my mind, $50 million, you know, piece of help is a drop in the bucket in terms of everything else that's going on. But mainly, I just wanted people to say, hey, I love, you know, we love having the arts in the community, but they also drive economic growth.
Well, I thought that was pretty important to get that message out there, Definitely. And a lot of people have been lobbying, and certainly on Stage and Studio, we have been covering that. Yeah. And as a reminder to our listeners, we are on location today. This is a location edition of Stage and Studio. I'm Dee Mae Roberts talking with Chris Coleman, Artistic Director of Portland Center Stage. I'm just wondering, how has PCS, or Portland Center Stage, weathered the economy?
Well, we're doing okay. It's a challenge. It is definitely a challenge. And the place we have seen the biggest hit is average ticket price. It's not necessarily that we're seeing fewer people attend. We're seeing people opt for the cheapest option we have, which is, you know, that's going to be a significant hit for us this year, that we're having to raise extra money to offset. I think some people have looked at us and said, oh, you guys are fine. And I think compared to others, maybe that's what we look like. But it's proving quite challenging for us, as it is for everybody.
You've been with small companies, large companies. Yeah. How much more difficult is it for a larger company than a small company, or is it all relative?
It's all relative, I think. You know, I started my theater in Atlanta in a recession, and it didn't really matter because we didn't have big corporate support. We didn't have government support for several years. So you were just working over individuals who were passionate about what you were doing. You know, right now, what's scary about the current environment is how many really solid corporate supporters and really solid individual supporters, you know, who've just been rock solid for you. You can see their own business is really, really struggling in a way that has got them preoccupied and scared, and that's unnerving. That's really not quite like anything I've experienced before. You know, I think we're all just praying that some of the things that the Obama administration is undertaking will have an effect, you know.
I think we're all hoping for that, definitely. Yeah. I mean, it is a curious time because there have been a lot of times when people, I mean, it's hard enough to get people into theaters anyway,
yeah.
You know, and especially in a time where everything seems so scary. Are there certain things that you're doing to attract people? I mean, you're always having to work that.
You know, we're just trying to be as smart as possible in terms of working the new media. A lot more of our resources are online than they were 3 or 4 years ago. We're really trying to make some headway in terms of the social networking stuff that's out there. I don't really have any personal interest in that, but I've gotten onto it just to kind of try to understand and have a voice in the community because I know a lot of people pay attention to it. So we are having to kind of rethink how you connect to people. And I know that it was top of mind in selecting next season, which was really how do you put in this environment, how do you put together a season that makes it really hard for people not to subscribe? And of course, you always think that you do that, but I think we really put special emphasis in it because it's just going to be, we're all making choices. I'm making choices, you know? And so how do we make it as compelling as possible?
So do you want to announce your season here on Stage and Studio?
For you, Dee Mae, I think I could make that happen.
So what are some of the things you are doing next year?
Well, I won't give you the whole list, but we are opening with what I think is the most powerful musical of our time, which is Ragtime by Lynn Ahrens and Stephen Flaherty, based on the E.L. Doctorow novel, and gorgeous, soaring, you know, really moving music, spine-tingling music, and really about America in 1911, just as the ragtime as a musical form was taking hold, but also when we were this big influx of immigrants, you know, big in upstate New York or in metropolitan New York, big conflicts around integration among the races. And it's so unbelievably timely.
What I love about it is it's all about that turn of the century immigration and all the conflicts that happened and, you know, the middle classes at that time dealing with that too.
Yeah. And it's really gorgeous. And Let's see what else we're doing. We're going to do the first regional production of Thurgood, a one-man show about our first African-American Supreme Court justice.
Really? And that's been done before then?
It was done on Broadway last year.
I didn't realize that. Yeah. Who's the actor?
We're going to use Wendell Wright, who starred in our production of Fences.
Oh, wonderful. Yeah.
Wendell got so taken with the fly fishing. He's an avid fly fisherman, and so he moved to Portland a year ago, and I've been looking for projects for him. We're also going to do a new stage adaptation of Snow Falling on Cedars by David Gutterson.
Really? The interment and everything? Yeah. Oh, that's awesome. Because I saw the film, and I actually liked the film, and it was filmed in Portland.
Yeah, it's just a gorgeous story. And a piece of history that it was really below my radar screen. You know, you heard the idea, but how it affected, you know, individual lives, didn't really know. And then kind of following the literary theme, we're also going to do adaptation of Chaim Potok's novel, The Chosen, about two Jewish boys in Brooklyn during World War II, one from a Hasidic family, one from a Reform family, and trying to bridge the cultural gap between them. And then world premiere of a new musical by two very hot female composers in New York, Marcy Heisler and Zena Goldrich. And then closing the season with the 25th annual Putnam County Spelling Bee by Bill Finn.
That's supposed to be a lot of fun.
Yeah.
It sounds like a good mixture, definitely. And thank you for announcing it on stage and studio.
Sure.
I'm Dee Mae Roberts here with Chris Coleman in his office, and we're on location today. And I actually want to get to your current season, which you're going to be opening The Importance of Being Earnest in a
couple of days.
Yeah, so as of this airing, you're going to be in previews.
Yeah.
And so, you know, when you think about the importance of being earnest, you always think about that classic play everybody does in high school and college, and it's just a play of manners, and you've got the four lovers, you know, the Cecily and the Gwendolyn, the Algernon and
Jack.
Yes. He can't even be a proper John, right? So so it's just a really, you know, startling and funny play. But then you think about Oscar Wilde and his life.
Oh, yeah.
You know, what is your first experience with The Importance of Being Earnest?
Oh, gosh, that's so funny, because I was realizing the other day, when I was a senior in high school, we went to one-act play competition. This was in Atlanta, Georgia, and one of the plays we competed against was a one-act version, all African-American cast of The Importance of Being Earnest.
Now that I'd like to see.
Oh, my gosh, it was really terrible and really quite hilarious, but some of the line readings have stayed with me. And then I did a production in graduate school that I liked, but I don't think I ever really quite understood the world of the play. It seemed just like a cartoon to me. And in some ways it is, but since I've done more Shaw and I've done more kind of plays of this period, I understand a lot more about the social world. And so I got interested in seeing if we could find both the humor and the humanity inside the kind of, it's not farce. It's very, very high comedy of manners. But it's so artificial in some ways. And I just wanted to see if we could find the people inside that.
Well, there's so much social commentary, too, about the ruling classes of that time, too. And I'm kind of torn about the press release.
Yeah? What do you say?
Well, oh, okay. Well, it talks a little bit about the controversies that plagued Oscar Wilde's life.
Yeah.
And, you know, of course, you know, for our listeners, he was jailed because he's, you know, he was homosexual and it was scandalous. And he actually wrote The Importance of Being Earnest as sort of quick cash, you know, trying to, you know, do a comedy.
Mm-hmm.
But it's, I guess, has some double entendres regarding the London society or the gay world at that time.
Mm-hmm.
Is that true? I mean,
oh, it is true, but it's not very useful information. I mean, it's just curious information.
But you don't use it in the
play. No, we talked about it in rehearsal, and it's interesting to note, but you can't play it. It doesn't really, unless you're going to kind of make the whole production about that, it doesn't really allow you to build the relationships in the play. And so I wanted to play it straight, pardon the pun. But also, you know, his mom, Wilde was born of Irish aristocracy. His dad was a physician. His mom was a poet and a revolutionary fighting for Irish home rule. And so I think it's interesting that all of his plays were about the upper crust of British society, who were the oppressors, you know, in the mind of his parents, and that he just became obsessed with that with probably the most artificial social stratification in history and turned it on its head. And the structure of the jokes is all an inversion of a maxim about how to live your life. It's turning, upending the customary social order.
So it has really nothing to do with, you know, the term earnest isn't necessarily going to be used as a code word for being gay.
Well, I mean, I think some like the five guys, you know, in a gay bar in London in 1895 may have known that, but it's not very useful or interesting, I don't think, for a contemporary audience. I think the entendre is on, my name is Ernest, I'm also honest, or I am dishonest. You know, what does it mean to be straightforward? What does it mean to not be straightforward?
And also it's about the ridiculousness of the importance of that name,
yeah,
too. That, yeah, you know, that these women can't fall in love with somebody unless their name is Ernest.
Yeah, yeah.
So there's all that stuff going on, which is, makes it a delightful comedy.
Oh, it's just the silliest thing you ever heard, you know.
And biting criticism of the times,
oh,
too.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. Oh, hilarious. One of my favorite lines is Lady Bracknell talking about the education, the whole theory of modern education is radically unsound. Fortunately, in England, at any rate, education produces no effect whatsoever. You know, and I, you know, he of course, it's hilarious, but it's also, I'm sure, probably part of his observation.
And also, I guess it was based on a news story that there actually was an infant who was abandoned, yeah, in a railway at King's Cross railway station.
In a handbag. Yeah.
So that's pretty interesting that he got that, and that's the main character's dilemmas, yeah, his background.
Yeah, and it's not until this production did we find that piece of research, and I thought he just completely fabricated, because it's like, it sounds like the most utterly ridiculous situation, and that it actually happened. It's just a hoot. So,
yeah, there's a lot of fun to it, too. So are you staging it any differently than how it's been staged? Is it in the same time period?
Oh, no, it's set in 1895, beautiful period costumes, really trying to do it as truthfully and as straight up from the period as we can deliver, and just deliver it beautifully.
Just so well-spoken language, good,
yeah,
acting,
yeah,
and lots of fun.
And get out of the way.
And let it happen.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah.
So it's not on a space station somewhere.
No, there's no weird concept.
No, I think it's fun. It's definitely, I remember one of the versions I saw that I loved was in the Old Vic Theater in London, way, way back in the 80s. And it was just lovely to see that, mm-hmm, you know, because it's something that I think, especially American society, we don't really deal with manners,
yeah,
so much. We don't think we do,
yeah,
anyway, you know. Yeah. And so it's really fun to watch, you know, somebody across the ocean dealing with this and thinking it's very important.
Yes, yes. And who's totally, they're so wrapped up in it. We don't like snobs much in this country, so it's great fun to kind of spend an evening laughing at snobby people.
Well, The Importance of Being Earnest previews through February 26th with the gala opening night performance on Friday, February 27th. The production runs Tuesday through Sunday through March 29th with 7:30 p.m. on Tuesday through Saturday performances and matinees at 2 p.m. on Sundays. Plus there are some weekday matinee performances at noon and Thursdays. You really keep busy here at Portland Center Stage. So for more info, go to pcs.org for more info. And tickets range from $30 to $66 with student and rush tickets available. And so for more information, call 503-445-3700. That's 445-3700. Or go online at pcs.org. We have a pair of tickets for the third caller here at KBOO at 503-231-8032. That's 231-8032. I'm Dee Mae Roberts with Chris Coleman, Artistic Director of Portland Center Stage, on location today with this special edition in Chris's office, stage and studio. So you're going into your 10th year soon, or,
yeah,
you know,
yeah,
you've been here 9 years.
Yeah.
What are the plans? I mean, you've done so much. Before I talk about the plans, what are you most proud of?
Oh, gosh. I think you're sitting in what I'm most proud of. When I first interviewed for the job, we talked about the need for a new home. I never imagined it would be this cool, or that it would, so many people in the community would embrace it, or that it would just even look like this or be this fun to come to work every day. So the building has been just incredible reward, and it's really, really fun to look out over there and see people enjoying it. That, and, you know, we hit 10,000 subscribers this year for the first time in 15 years. And in the national environment, where all most subscription rates are down, that's just been incredible to see the community kind of get excited about what's going on here. That's been so much fun.
And yet, in the next 10, you know, the next, your 10th year, you're going to have to keep that going.
Oh, yeah.
You're
going
to have to keep the momentum going. What are your plans for that?
Well, I think, you know, part of planning next season, as I said, was trying to find really powerful work that resonated for our time and that it was going to make it hard for people not to want to stay involved and to choose participating here, even in this economic environment. I mean, so part of it is weathering the storm. I mean, that's what the challenge of next year is, weathering the storm. I would love to see Storm Large's show that we're opening in you know, a couple of months. I'd love to see us take that to New York, and there's some interest in that possibility. I would love for us to begin to move more work to New York.
I would like to see that happen too, because I don't know if you know this, I was a playwright for a while here, and I won the Oregon Book Award and did shows at ART and what was it, Portland Rep before, you know, and you would do a play here, but it wouldn't go anywhere without those contacts.
Yeah.
So I would really like to see that happen where, you know, playwrights here in Portland can be respected enough, you know, so that, you know, somebody else outside of the city would, you know, would want to run it, to produce it.
Yeah, I totally agree with that. And I just think, I think there's a lot of really exciting work happening in this city that more people need to know about. So I'd love for us to be a part of sharing more of that.
A lot of that is your connections too that you bring into this.
It is, but it has to be more proactive, I think, on our part, because Portland is it's not an easy flight to get here from the East Coast. It's long, and you, like, if somebody's coming into Seattle or they're coming into LA from New York, there's other stuff they can bundle with it. To come here, they usually have to come for, like, they're coming for one thing. Unless you can say, you know, you can have a meal at 10 of the best restaurants in the country. But so it's a challenge, and really you it takes some work. I think with Storm Show we have a unique opportunity because there's some real interest in the commercial viability of
it. And it's
that.
Easy to move.
It's,
I mean,
easy,
that's what you mean, easier
to
produce.
Be easy to move.
And she comes with it?
Oh, yeah, baby. Oh, yeah.
Well, I would like to see that happening. It definitely, people don't realize how many artists there are in Portland.
Yeah.
And it's actually growing.
Yeah.
I mean, we have places like Milepost 5 that, you know, is on 82nd Street and is designed as an arts community for all the new people moving in, all the new artists. And it's really burgeoning at a really critical time.
Yeah, it is. It is. And it's exciting. And I just hope that, you know, there's some really interesting work happening in the foundation community, some interesting work happening at the city to increase kind of the long-term economic viability of the cultural community in the city. And I think it's critical because, as you say, there's a lot of people coming, there's a lot of talent. The question is, can we create an ecology, a funding ecology, that's strong enough to allow people to grow or to develop an enterprise that then, you know, they can support themselves and creates jobs and audiences and a going concern, if you will.
And it's something that's not going to be happening in the next year.
Yeah.
I mean, we're looking at way into the future here.
Yeah.
Any final thoughts about what you're looking forward to, what you think we need to do as the Portland community, perhaps during this critical time?
I think at economic times like this, what happens kind of to the critical organizations in a cultural community is either they try to cut their way out of the problem and they kind of dismantle the core of who they are and they never really recover. Or some of the families in the community who still have, they may have less than they did, you know, a year ago, still have, decide we can't let that organization go. I have to step up in a stronger way. And I really just hope that the people that are turned to in this moment decide it's important for the critical players to stick around.
Well, Chris Coleman, I hope you do stick around.
Thank
Are you planning to?
I am.
I mean, it's been almost a decade, another decade?
Well, my partner is in doing prerequisites for nursing school, so I think until he's done, we're stuck here, you know.
So you are
But
here.
yeah,
Yeah, you're here to stay. I don't think you're stuck at all.
no, I'm having a
Yeah.
good time.
Yeah.
I am having
You
a good time.
really, yeah, you've accomplished a lot, and I can see that you're very much connected to the entire community, the arts community, as well as the business community, everything that needs to happen to keep the arts going. So, and I see you before every show practically,
Good
you
God.
know.
It's sad. It's really
I
sad,
must hit
isn't
the right shows where you come in and you talk to people. Now turn off your cell phones.
Well, I've done more this year, but yeah, you're right. It's
But
sad.
you are the face, and we need to have that connection too, so it's not faceless, definitely. Chris Coleman, Artistic Director, Portland Center Stage, thank you so much for letting me talk to you
Hey,
here on your office and doing
anytime,
this on
anytime.
location
You made it
thing.
so easy.
Well, thank you. It's been a total pleasure. Now, if you missed any of this interview, you can listen online starting tomorrow and download a podcast of the show as well and hear it again at kboo.fm/stageandstudio. You can also join our Stage and Studio Facebook page for updates and previews. That's it for Stage and Studio this week. Next week, we're sleeping in a little, moving to our new time at 11 a.m. So till then, I'm Dee Mae Roberts.